And he ended up giving me the book, I believe, or he took the $3 or whatever it was. But I never want that to be an issue with people that are looking for work. I don't want them to be held back by, I can't afford a resume rewrite, or I don't have this resource. There's resources available online that are almost for free or very low cost that were never available. And you can get them on your phone, and they're available almost everywhere. When I was in high school, there was internet cafes that you had to go and like get on the internet for, and there were certain places to do it. It wasn't just like it's in a device that's more sophisticated than what launched the spaceships into space with NASA on your phone. See? And I don't want people to have to deal with that ever again.
That's Michael Midnight, and this is the latest episode of the All Things Risk podcast. Hello, one and all. Welcome and welcome back to the All Things Risk podcast. My name is Ben Cattaneo. I'm your host. This is my show. The All Things Risk podcast is where we go long form with some great guests. We look at the world through the lenses of risk and uncertainty. And we do this for, I guess, three reasons. Number one, to help us make better decisions through understanding how others approach decision making in the midst of uncertainty. Number two, to get comfortable with risk and uncertainty, because let's face it, risk is all around us and we need to embrace it rather than shun it. And thirdly, it's to understand our world just that little bit more. Before we get into it, a little bit of business. This episode is brought to you by Audible, where if you're a listener to the All Things Risk podcast, you can get a 30-day trial and a free audiobook. You can choose from over 180,000 titles and get something for your Android device, your Kindle, or your iPhone. And to do that, just go to audibletrial.com/allthingsrisk if you are in the US. If you're in the UK, just click on the link accompanying the post for this episode. Today, we get into creativity, marketing, design, and our own careers. My guest for this episode is a guy with a very cool name, but an even cooler guy. His name is Michael Midnight. Michael is a design and marketing consultant with his brand Mike Tech Studios. He's a career advocate with his series Recruitamentary, which is very cool. And he's a fellow podcast host as well. We cover lots of stuff from the art of marketing, the value of authenticity, and we enjoy the rich depths and importance of storytelling for an experience, and lots of very good references, including one from The Lion King. And if marketing, sales, design, creative thinking, or a wide range of humorous takes on industry experiences is of interest to you, then this would be an episode worth listening to. And if it isn't, I think it's still worth listening to, because Michael has some very useful insights that I think translate across a number of domains when managing our interactions, our professional and also our personal, but primarily our professional interactions. And I think you'll get a lot out of this. So I don't want to delay the intro anymore and delay this wonderful conversation anymore. So let's dive in. Here's Michael Midnight. Michael, welcome to the All Things Risk podcast. Really a pleasure to have you on, and I'm looking forward to our chat.
Absolutely. Likewise, man. Glad to have me on as well.
This is going to be fun. We're going to talk about all things work and careers and I don't know what else. I think lots of interesting things are going to come out. But one of the things I just wanted to establish first is what you say you do when you're asked what it is you do. How do you respond to that?
Oh, depends on who I ask and depends on how much time they have. But, it really depends, and it's an excellent question. It's something that I've given a lot of thought about over the years. Originally speaking, I'd be a graphic designer or a marketer. What I find is when you give things a very specific title like that, it comes with the complications of typecasting that individual for that experience. So in the graphic design world, when I was, 10 or so years younger, you have motion graphic designer, you have a variety of different expertise niches that define the design experience. So motion graphic designer would be people that you would see that work on the news, or 3D AutoCAD. That would be also another form of design that's more into blueprinting and even more sophisticated effects that you'd see perhaps maybe in the movies. All the same thing makes it difficult to define. I like to just be real simple and say creative thinker. Marketer is pretty straightforward. Business development wraps into that as well. I'm also a fellow podcaster as of recent. When I was young, though, believe it or not, I actually wanted to pursue graphic design, not only because it's one of those tests that you take and it says, what are you good at? What do you want to do? And it ends up, clear across the board, you're going to be somebody creative, you're going to be an artist, or you're going to be artist, graphic designer, and welder in that order. And I don't know where they got welder from, because I have no welding experience whatsoever.
Yeah, I took one of those tests and I got actuary.
Okay.
And I'm like, no. So you never know.
I feel like it's an eight ball that they use on those things. It's like, all right, we have two good spots that make sense. Let's just shake this one up. It's like, ask again later. All right, let's just plug it in with something that nobody has picked and go with that. And welder, like, how do you go from like the most artistic things that have to do with details and meticulation and then go to something extremely, and no offense to anybody who does weld, but I mean, we're going clear across the pond as far as for industry here. So it just was very strange. But that essentially, it's about telling a story. It's about marketing, and it's about business support and where it is that I can support a given business entity, group, organization, or even, individuals as well. So this could be, personally consulting with the Mike Tech Studios brands, design work, social media content, video ads, things of that nature. Or if I can, sort of osmosisize myself into an organization and utilize those strengths, I do it there. So it really just depends on what industry or what the responsibilities are. I find that the titles they're incredibly cryptic as to what an individual is capable of. So you have to be really careful when you say who you are. But, obviously my name is Michael Midnight, so that's easy enough to introduce as. And I think that overall, creative thinker is all encompassing of those things. It lets you know that you think outside the box, you are creative, and ultimately you are working on optimizing, workloads, features, new opportunities. You're all there. So that's,
and would you say you were always in the creative space? Were you into art and entertainment and all forms of visual and audio art as a child or growing up? Were there certain moments where you thought, yeah, this makes sense for me?
Absolutely. So when you are growing up, there is a thing called imagination. And as you get older, unfortunately, for whatever reason, there becomes a lack thereof. It may just be financial responsibility. It may just be the begrudgments of the day-to-day, things that you find yourself or things that are encroaching into your personal space, and you lose that. When you are young, you have the ability to engage with everything and everybody. There's no such thing as a stupid question. There's not really judgment per se. It's not handled the same way when you're a child. And you will connect with anybody regardless of what they look like, what they're doing. If it seems fun, you want to be a part of it. It's very, very, very simple. Growing up, ironically enough, I was in a interesting bubble where for the majority of my life, right up until probably my mid to late teens, I didn't have cable. There wasn't internet in the household. Mm-hmm. There wasn't even a house phone. So the family structure was very much pushed on doing things that were educational, I guess you could say now, but focused on being creative, focused on, you know, playing video games was probably a big thing, focused on reading, focused on puzzles. And I found myself really just in everything that had to do with sci-fi and just things that were out there. They were very interesting to me because it was something completely different than, you know, an ordinary stick or some Legos or something that were there. So ironically enough, growing up, I actually wanted to be a game designer, game developer. Mm-hmm. I was a huge fan of obviously the Nintendo and Mario Brothers and Mega Man and stuff like that. And I just, boy, if you ask some people that knew me from back in the day, I'd wake up 10, 11 o'clock at night. I'd go and make myself a peanut butter and fluff sandwich, sit myself in front of the TV and try to beat these last remaining levels in Super Mario Brothers 3. And I'd fall asleep all the time. There's just certain things that you can't figure out as a child. But I loved the detail where you had to figure out this thing that didn't exist, you know? And that's the fascination that I have with story, with things that don't exist, but we have so much detail to them that it's just, you understand these characters better than you do yourself or real people, you know? For example, what's the color of Mace Windu's lightsaber? Most people know that, you know.
I don't remember that.
Remember that?
Is it purple? Is it purple?
It's purple.
Oh,
it's
there you go. I did. Somewhere I remember that. Yeah.
But that's exactly my point, and that proves it. You know, when you say Kermit, what comes to mind? You know, is it Kermit the Frog here? Oh, yeah, I know Kermit. You know, and these are individuals. You know, I mean that now become entities in your life. They're just as real as a president or your teacher. Or, you know, if I say Simba or Goku, people know immediately who these individuals are, you know, again, more so than, you know, maybe some of their family members. But then you ask something like, you know, hey, what was Zachary Taylor, you know, most remembered for? People got to pause for a second and think about it. Maybe some older individuals or people still in school might know. A lot of people don't. The actuality is that's the 12th U.S. president. In the mid-1800s in the U.S. So, you know, again, it's really just the ability to have that interest in stories. So my passion really is for just the detail, the color, the value, the authenticity of really just meaningful and memorable interactions of those experiences and how to bring those into my life. So growing up, these were really critical to me. You know, these really shaped who I was. I was reading about these people that didn't exist and they were real, you know, based on these just such minuscule details and the minutia of information. And from that, I realized, wow, that's really interesting. You know,
it's also really powerful. I was, you were talking, when you're talking about the power of story, I was recently at a conference with a bunch of technical folks and they're all very competent at what they do. But as I was listening to a number of their presentations, it wasn't that engaging, I have to admit. And the ones that were very engaging were the ones that could tell a story, that could take, you know, the detail, but actually go from point A to B to C and so on. And it struck me that any of those people who really struggle to deliver a message, but were very competent, if they just had a little bit more skill at telling a story, their career trajectory would just skyrocket.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we have, you always, when you're giving a meeting or a speech, something of value of that nature, I always, and I'm sometimes at fault, you know, with it as well. I often say to people, if you have a friend of yours or you have an assistant or associate, even in a meeting, have them, you know, have them with your permission, of course, but have them record you and listen to your own voice. And I know that's hard for a lot of people to do, including myself, but listen to how your cadence, listen to what you're talking about. Is it boring? Is it engaging? Would it be something that you would take the time to reach out and actually listen to? And if not, rework it. Mm-hmm. You know, a great example that I love to give, you know, based on the story factors is, there's obviously a well-known Disney movie, Lion King. And, I used this experience in a previous podcast with another individual who I was a guest with. And but the fact of the matter is that if people don't know the scene at this point, please go and watch the movie and come back. But there's a very critical scene where you have Simba, who is the young son to Mufasa, who is the leader of the Pride Lands, and he's stuck in a cavern. A ravine of a stampede, and it was caused by, unfortunately, some hyenas that Scar, which would be Mufasa's brother, sort of planned to have happen. They're trying to kill off the royal bloodline. Mm-hmm. And I fast forward to there's a very critical part where Simba basically watches the death of his father. Now, the word death is never used once. This is a child's movie. This is a family-friendly, mm-hmm. Movie. And all of the personalities, James Earl Jones voices Mufasa, and you just see the fear in his eyes, and then Scar, who Jeremy Irons, I think they're called inflections in the throat and in the voice. And he just gets in and he just looks very, not only who penned and articulated what the lion looks like, the dark and the scar and all that, but just when he leans in and he goes, "Long live the king." And there's a chill that goes down your spine when you hear that and you see that. And then you just watch this life, this body falling into the stampeding herd. You know what's happening as a viewer. And maybe as a child, you're not exactly sure, and you're finding out the same way that Simba is that dad's not getting up. Mm-hmm. Dad is, for whatever reason, there. And it is a very, very dark thing to do. But the fact of the matter is that it never happened. This is paint. This is ink. This is drawings. It's sketching. It's people that are talking on microphones like me and you. And to be able to go, whoa, like, that moves me more than certain family members that have passed. I remember that. And I will remember that for the rest of my life. And that impact on that story, if you're not creating that level of impact and that level of storytelling with whatever it is that you do on your day-to-day basis, people are not going to listen to you. And it's not about talking about a gimmick. It's about having value. There's the value of life in that example. There's the respect of death and how we don't touch on that, just how the dust sort of settled on the body and settled on the scene, and the upset of Jonathan Taylor Thomas's voice. And he's like, "Dad, get up, Dad, please get up. And he can't understand why, like a child would. They don't perceive, they don't have those dark inklings of what happens to the rest of the world. They're still naive. They don't know what it means to have that body lay there. And again, that is magic. So if people could take those elements of storytelling, again, those details, every one of those things are meticulous details that are taken from real life. That's why they impact us the same way as if they actually, if it happened to us in the street, or if it was a family member, we react the same way. So I find that to be incredibly powerful, and you are correct. Not a lot of people take advantage of this, unfortunately.
Absolutely. And sometimes, and this is perhaps a good way to segue into the world of design and branding and all the stuff that you've done, it's actually very difficult. If I'm really embedded in the subject matter of whatever it is I'm involved in, I feel like almost everything is super important and it has to be included. And it's hard for me to separate from the broader story. And it's useful to bring someone who understands the storytelling aspect of what it is you're trying to communicate and be able to lift the big messages outside of that. It's a lot easier for someone like me to look at an area that I don't understand and try to make some sense of story or provide some advice versus trying to do it for sometimes my own subject matter that I'm working on. It could be a big investigation report, whatever. It could be anything. So bring someone who has those design and branding skills to whatever is incredibly valuable.
It is. And I think that people really undermine and underestimate the value of branding and the value of having those types of individuals really in your resource arsenal. So to give you a perfect example, in a lot of my earlier experiences in life, they were based on opportunities where people would try to fit you in where they thought would make sense with their organization, but they would always refer to it as, you know, the marketing thing or while you're doing your design thing. And they really segmented the value of what it was. They really minimized it down to that, you know, that postcard or those digital web ads or that email campaign. It was just one thing to them. And what you really need to have with people is a perception of value based on long-term investment. Things are great short-term. You make short-term money, you make short-term investments, and they yield maybe a short-term profit. But it's not going to help you long term. And also, if you have a hodgepodge of branding, your business cards look one way, your website's not updated and it looks something different, generally speaking, people are not going to think that you are as valuable as perhaps you are in your industry. And again, that's the takeaway that I have in these conversations with, you know, with even somebody as small as a company of 5 or 10. And then also you end up missing out if you're a company of a couple hundred, if you're missing on the social media platforms as well. They are a very active space to be in right now. That is, for example, I just got off the phone with a lawyer or law firm last week, rather, and they were looking to really branch more into social media. Again, we talk about law, we talk about trust, you know, trustworthiness. Is this something that I would find value in? Is this somebody who I find responsible? Would I trust them with not only investments with, you know, potential, you know, lawsuit related issues or anything that comes into their, you know, realm of resource? Is this going to be somebody who I can see my community and go, oh yeah, hey, yes, I know Jane. Jane is awesome. I'm going to refer Jane to, you know, to Tom, to Bill, to Joe, to whoever it is, because I really respect what it is that, you know, she's about. And I mean, I cannot tell you what industry that doesn't need that type of reputation resource. It's not a part-time thing. It's a full-time thing. So when you build those conversations, you build them based on, okay, does your reputation reflect on social media? Does your reputation, is it obvious? Does it feel like a quality product? And when I give my business card out, does it feel like the work that I do? Mm-hmm. And those are the things that you really have to keep in mind, because some people step back and they go, no, or maybe, or okay, keep talking. And you have to know, you know, who it is that you're talking with. If it's a big company, you know that they're established. They've been beaten up a little while. They've made it past all of the, you know, the layoffs and the restructurings and the business directions. They've done all that. But right. When you have the smaller fish and they think that they need to be focused on one specific thing. I had another conversation with another guy he's selling a lot of great product. Great guy. He's very busy right now. With a couple of other business ventures, and he wants to circle back on a lock product and service that he has. Making good money, his website is non-functional, his social media is out of date, he needs new product images. Mm-hmm. It's very obvious that he needs help. So he reached out and he was only like, okay, I just need product images. So right. We had a conversation, you know, we talked about what his product was. We talked about what his goals were. And I said, well, really what you're looking for is, you know, this, that, and the other thing, your website. I get on the website. It says that you're not taking orders from 2 years ago. The copyright's out of date. Your form doesn't work. I can't even reach out to you if I did. And your phone number for the office is hard to find. You're actually making it difficult for a customer or potential customer, or even a present customer who's having an issue, to reach out to you. You want to minimize those conflicts that you're going to have, negative reviews and feedbacks and, you know, negative referrals on the internet and also in person in the future by looking at these things and trying to avoid them. And they're not going to be able to do that. Their mind is, okay, I need to be business developing. I need to be reaching out and collaborating, partnering. I need to be bringing on new client. They're not thinking about that. But meanwhile, that's just as important as the next new client, because if you can't keep that support with the clients you have now, you're going to burn out your new clients that you bring on in the same manner very quickly. So.
Sure. And I think it also strikes me that for, particularly for smaller organizations, the brand is not just what the images look like. It's not just what the website looks like. It needs to permeate every interaction.
Exactly. It needs to feel like what it is you are doing, what you say you do. So if I feel that you are a banker or somebody financial related, I want your product, I want your copy, I want your brochures, I want your video, I want your message to be just as impactful as the opportunities and experiences that you're bringing to the table. If they don't, I'm going to question your authenticity. I'm going to question your value. And are you really doing the type of work, or are you as quality as you know, you are perceiving yourself to be? And sometimes the answer is yes, they are. It's just they haven't given clear thought. They turn to opportunities like Fiverr or Craigslist or, you know, cheaper resources to make these things happen as a holdover. I mean, and that's great if a holdover is what you're looking for business. But again, we talk about short-term gains versus long-term. That person, it doesn't care about your business long-term. They care about the job. They've completed the task. They move forward. That's all they see. They're not future forecasting and doing business, you know, analysis with you. When you have somebody who's working with you and consulting either independently or you're brought on as a, you know, as a full-term resource, this person is there to grow your business. They're there for you. They're there to help you out and to speak that message, to help become a, you know, brand or product evangelist, or train those who can be. And that is the foresight that is missing with a lot of smaller companies. And they end up, you know, it's not about working hard, it's about working smart. Mm-hmm. So they end up working incredibly hard and they burn themselves out because they're not working smart. Mm-hmm. So that is definitely a reoccurring pattern that I, you know, that I do see with people who do reach out, or with clients that I have had in the past.
It's tough, isn't it? Because there are so many avenues and platforms. And I'm just thinking about my own podcast and what I'm doing here, for example. There's so many things that you can do. And you get an email from someone, a marketing email saying, you know, we've got this great new app and you can get your message out in this way and that way, and say, oh, that's a good idea. And all of a sudden, without a strategy, you're just moving from one thing to the next without a grounded, you know, potentially a grounded view of what it is you're trying to accomplish and how it all fits together.
Absolutely. And that is really where it comes down to, that I like to set up goals in three ways. Number one is going to be immediate band-aid issues or within 24-hour turnarounds. These are things that are not going to look pretty. They're again, just function only. They're not about being pretty. They're going to solve the problem. It's probably not going to be the best idea, but it'll give you, it'll cauterize the wound is really the term. And those are good to keep you for a couple of days or a week, depending on what the issue is. This could be website being down. This could be brochures. This could be something as simple as somebody orders business cards and they say, listen, I have no business cards. I'm meeting with a couple of clients this week. Can you set me up with business cards until the actual order comes in? I say, absolutely. I will give you something. They are not going to be perfect quality cards, but listen, they're going to look like what the rest of your brand is. It's going to have your contact information. You're going to be able to hand this out to somebody tomorrow. There's value in that because, again, you understand the situation that they're in. And you're still providing a service where in a week or 2 weeks when their good stuff comes in, you haven't lost that client. They've been able to hand something out. So that's step one. Step two is going to be a short-term goal. So a short-term goal would be, okay, like we just described for the business cards, for example. That's going to be something I reorder, you know, for myself or for my assistant or for whoever it is that we're focused in on. Long-term would be, where are the files that we have for the business cards? Do we have them set up and ready to go? Do we have a specific printer? Can we establish a relationship with them? Can we do a drop ship bulk order? You know, save some money, order cards all at once if we're hiring on a staff or you know, 5 or 10 people at a time, and we're going to make that investment. Let's see if we can make that happen. There's going to be risk in doing that. There's going to be risk in investing in somebody who's new and they may not last that year, or they may change opportunities. It's the part of doing business, you know, but these are things that, again, they're very long-term opportunities. Business cards is probably not a good example, but you get the idea.
Yeah.
And you know, as do the listeners, where there's going to be risks and future-proofing that you want to keep in mind and optimize the process so that you don't have to stop everything where it is and say, hey, I need to order these, you know, right now. I'm walking out. I need to meet a client. We're picking him up at the airport and I have no business cards on me at all. It looks really bad. No matter how much money you're doing or not doing, how, you know, big the agreement is, you don't want to be that guy or girl.
Right.
So that is really my approach that I do pitch to individuals. And there's value in that because you do see the long-term investment. They see that you're thinking about their brand. It's not just a job. We're sitting in, we're talking together. We're doing this in a warm manner.
Got it.
And, you know, so.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think the sense of purpose around whatever the brand is really comes through in all of that. I did want to transition to the individual, and because you've started this thing called Recruitmentary, and I think it ties in very nicely what's happening socioeconomically in the world with things like the gig economy and a range of changes. And we've been talking a lot about entrepreneurism, and I think we're all, to an extent, mini entrepreneurs. Even if we work in a large organization, we have to think about our brand, we have to think about our purpose, all of that good stuff. So I wanted to maybe move to talking about the world of work and what it all means as individuals, and tie that in with the work that you do with Recruitmentary. So maybe let's just open things up with what is Recruitmentary, and what is the vision, mission, purpose? How did you get to that point where you wanted to start something like that up?
Absolutely. Well, Recruitmentary is based on a lot of the pain points that we unfortunately involve ourselves with in any day-to-day business or mode of operation. And it's also a conversation that's open to all individuals, regardless of where they stand on the sides of the table. You could be a hiring manager, you could be a recruiter, you could be a job seeker, a resume writer, career coach, career advocate. I mean, if you have a say, or you've done some sort of work in hiring somebody, being hired, or any part of that process from start to finish, this would be the place for you. It started essentially because, if we're going to be honest, in my line of work, the most experience that I've had is engaging with people for business opportunity. So this could be with a business specifically for a role, you know, a employee driven opportunity, or this could be, again, as a consulting factor. And for the majority of the conversations that I have had with staffing firms and recruiters and things of that nature, they're lackluster. Mm-hmm. They're painful. They're incredibly painful. And there's always a technicality when you have quality talent and candidates that are available that just, oh, you know what? You have this area code, so you're probably not from around here. We're going to discard you. Or, oh, you know what? We took a phone survey. You didn't pass the phone interview. You scored great in person, but the phone interview, you didn't press the right buttons. You're out. And it's just, it's a game. And unfortunately, this is people's, you know, well-being. These are companies that need skilled talent. These are individuals that have student debt, personal debt, families, children. Maybe they're close to claiming bankruptcy, or they're, you know, behind on payments on their house, or whatever the situation is.
Or hopes and dreams, and a sense of dread because they're in a box somewhere. Someone's hold them into this thing. So my identity is this thing, this cubicle that I've always done.
Right.
And I find it really frustrating. I work in risk, and risk is transferable to lots of different industries. And I worked in one industry early in my career. I worked for a company that did all security stuff. And all the calls that headhunters would approach me with was, you know, all these security roles. Even though I wasn't doing security stuff, I was doing something else.
Right.
And then I moved into the environmental sort of sustainability space, but I was still doing pretty much risk and strategy. And then all of the calls were environmental and sustainability stuff. And it was on and I thought, you know, no one's really recognizing my skill set here.
Right.
And the most interesting one a few years ago was I was working for a very prominent Fortune 500 advisory firm, very big brand, and basically they called me up and they said, we want clones of you and your colleagues to work at this other firm. And I just thought, well, that sounds like the worst thing in the world. I don't want to work with a bunch of clones.
Yeah.
And you shake your head, because I've hired people and I know that it's hard to find good talent, and you really have to go through a lot of hoops, and you don't know how many great CVs get screened out, and you find sometimes the most amazing people after a few steps and just talking to them, and they didn't look like the best candidates on paper in the first place.
Mm-hmm. And that is the pain points that not only have I experienced, but I know that there are individuals. I mean, there's millions and millions of us in the world. And, you know, I can only talk from a Westerner's point of view. I don't know necessarily the European point of view or a lot of Eastern culture as well. So their expectations, priorities, and salary requirements are completely different. And that is when I just said I was doing the Mike Tech Studios podcast, and I just had a lot of just really bad experiences one after the other with recruiters that just either posed as being a friend and then defaulted to, well, you don't exactly fit the criteria. We need 5 or 10 years of experience, even though you've developed those relationships and those conversations with those individuals for months. And then another one where, you know, the infamous, you know, spray and pray for the resumes, you know, just sending 100 candidates over to a position. And then regardless of who gets picked, you get credit and you get paid. Yeah. I don't like either one of those situations. And that's what happened at the beginning of this year. So I said, you know what, this is stupid. This whole thing is a game. Let's start opening up conversations. Let's have conversations with, you know, I reached out immediately to people that I knew in the area, people that I knew on LinkedIn, you know, again, resume writers, career coaches, hiring managers, young, old, whatever, just everybody to come in and to just talk about what's going on, you know, what's their experiences, how can we better this? And from there, the mini series started and it took off and you know, we've had a lot of great guests on talking about a lot of different perceptions and answering a lot of great questions that I never would have expected. And this was a pain point for me, mind you. I like to focus in on this because it was something that I said, listen, it cannot be this good and this bad at the same time. I can't have these great of people that I know, and then I get these phone calls, they're just like ridiculous. And that is where I just said, you know what, at the end, within 90 people reaching out to me that wanted to sponsor this into its own thing. Into its own podcast, website, video content, because there is essentially value in teaching people how it is to engage for work and not necessarily doing, you know, the job seeking and searching for them. Have the misconception with a recruiter that I am reaching out to them for them to give me or find me a job. And that's not the case. The case is they have a job. Do you fit? No. And usually they move. I don't like that idea because it, again, it's very transactional.
Yeah.
And in the marketing world, you're looking to create those MSAs, those master service agreements. You want to do business with individuals more than just one-off. You don't want to burn bridges. And that is what Recruitmentory is. It is, again, let's teach people, let's engage people in these questions, in these errors, in these things that keep reoccurring. And let's create quality, humorous, fun content, articles, highlight those career advocates and those career resources that are, you know, not necessarily noticeable immediately right away. Or, you know, they're not trending. They're not the Grant Cardone of their world, you know, where people, don't, you know, they can't afford the marketing, but they're great at what they do. And I mean, it's changing a lot of people's lives, man. It's insane. I never thought that I would have. And again, this was something that was a side mini series. I said, all right, this is a pain point for me. This is something that I think people can find value in talking about these things. And I mean, I probably get at least 24 or so questions a week. Many of them are the same, you know, how can I advance in my career? What can I do to stand out and things of that nature? And I use a lot of those questions to create content on YouTube and you know, LinkedIn to further people's, you know, opportunities. Some you know, some of the biggest people, the biggest group that I didn't even think about when I started this was international students or international mm-hmm. talent, you know, mm-hmm. visa issues and things that they have to, hurdles they have to jump through or looking at a name. I mean, I've, you know, you see a Spanish name or a Caribbean name and you go, all right, you know, I don't know about that, buying that name. But when you are international and then trying to, you know, you're a student here and you're looking to start out and you don't have any job experience or very little, that's twice as hard. You know what I mean? And it's just, it's insane. And it's just, I want to be able to say, hey, listen, this is how you do it. This is where you go. These are some things to think about. And again, I'm not telling you the answers. What I want to do, and with a variety of great guests and you know, guest speakers and guest authors, is to get people to think creatively about what the experience is for job seeking and job searching, utilizing those skills that you're not thinking about in resources and, you know, places like, you know, Udemy or Google Primer or Khan Academy, things that you can have on your phone that could advance those opportunities. And I mean, I get people that reach out to me every day almost at this point now. And they're like, you know what, the production value on this is amazing. The value of what you said, I never thought about that. I had somebody who had listened to, and this is funny, had listened to one of the videos as a test, because I like to see people's reactions, you know, locally that I do know, and say, hey, you know, I'll see when they get bored, I'll see when they nod off. And they listened to it for a second time and went, oh, I never heard that the first time, this one section here about, you know, certifications or something like that. I need to use that. And I was like, but you listened to it the first time. They go, yeah, I don't know, I must've missed that. And it's funny because there is, and this is somebody who is, they're a senior in their field. They've been doing it for 20 plus years and I've taught them something. Mm-hmm. So that's a great thing. I mean, we could have anybody on. It could be a job seeker. It could be, a hiring manager. It could be a job owner a business owner. I want to be able to have those conversations with a variety of people in a learning environment, not a negative environment. I don't want to hear about what jobs you can't have and have divorce and have all, that's fine. It's going to happen, but let's work on the things that we can work on. And I mean, right now it is critical to have that type of positive focus because I mean, I'm not sure what's happened with you guys over there on the other side of the pond here, but you know, unfortunately the political waters here are a little bit rough and it has
the same. I mean,
it's uneasy, man.
Yeah. And you talk about international students. I mean, I was there. I'm a Canadian and I've worked all over the world. I'm Canadian based in the UK. I've been through it. And so many times I was struck by, you know, it would be great to have a little bit of guidance here because, I remember there was a book that I had that was really a great book, came out in the mid 1990s. Called The Canadian Guides to Living and Working Overseas. And nice. My God, a wonderful competitor, but a really big, fat, thick book.
The Bible.
Yeah, pretty much. And had little things in there about, you know, in Europe, they're not called resumes, they're called CVs. And you might want to phrase this in this way. And here are certain kinds of organizations. And, you know, just wonderful. But even with that, I always got to a point where my circumstances now are, you know, they don't really fit well with this book entirely. And so it would be great to have, I mean, I'll give you an example. My grandfather was British and I'm a Canadian citizen. And if you're a Commonwealth citizen and you have a grandparent that was British, then you can get something called an ancestry visa.
Nice.
And you can work in the UK. And I didn't know that until about 8 years after I graduated from grad school. And I was living here. And I, you know, while I was living here, I found out, well, I could just change my visa to this and I can get a job anywhere because I was on an employer visa. So I was stuck to my employer. And that sort of opened up the whole world. But when I was graduating and just kind of going out in the world, that would have been a great thing to know. and I didn't. So it was a different world back then, but there's, you know, just it's, there's so many wonderful, talented people who have international experience that doesn't quite translate. So it's something that is a bit close to my heart because I was there. And as an employer, you know, when I'm hiring people, I keep an open mind to those things, and I really value people who are from another, you know, part of the world and can bring certain skills and perspectives. But those resources don't exist. So I think what you're doing is great. I really like that. I was wondering if we could talk a little bit about how what you're seeing with regard to the gig economy and artificial intelligence and automation is driving some of the questions that you're getting and some of the things that you're seeing both in the recruiter, the employer side, and the job seeker side, if you have any views or thoughts on that.
Absolutely. I mean, again, I like to keep up on the upcoming tech and trending and topics, not only for, you know, business and consulting and trying to advertise those opportunities as they become more cheaply accessible, you know, to clients, but also just because it's a general interest to me and it's really guiding and also kind of guarding where jobs are popping up. So I want to say, the next new hotspot is going to be data and data scientists, being able to manipulate and evaluate clean data for whether it be AI purposes, marketing, things of that nature. That's really where the focus is right now. The thing is that with those advancements and opportunities that do pop up, there's a cause and effect. I mean, you know, I like to say, you know, or something to think about is when you're born, you're given a time of birth when you come into this world, but you're not really given a death certificate with it. It's an absolute definitive fact that you're going to pass from this world at some point of time, of course, but it how and when is uncertain. And the uncertainty of the, you know, obviously somebody's coming into the world, there are people that are also passing, you're creating new opportunities. Some have to go to the wayside as well. The same way when we had the automation process of doing things in assembly line like fashion, 100 or so years ago, the cotton gin, Eli Whitney and his processes, the same things are happening with AI. So the first thing to go are going to be those repetitious, boring or dangerous jobs that are done on a day-to-day basis. These could be package handlers and warehouses. These could be flipping burgers that, you know, nobody wants to really do a lot of these jobs. And companies don't really want to pay for them either. So there's these videos that are circulating around now where you have some type of advanced suction process for loading and unloading trucks so that you minimize damage. They don't get tired. You know, you could run them as long as you want, day or night, within optimal temperatures, and to invest in those machines versus a lot of unruly, resource in human wise, okay, that gets hired, that have to take vacations, that can only work certain shifts. There's all of these legal stipulations. There's going to be a dramatic need for those types of, I don't want to say throwaway jobs because I don't want to disrespect anybody, but I mean, that's essentially what they are. They're jobs, I like to call them today jobs. You know, they're jobs that you can start or quit today. But that, I mean, you have all of those opportunities that are going away. You have these self-automated or self-driving vehicles. Google now has a bike prototype that they're doing where you could just say, I need a bike, and it just sort of starts up and in a I forget what it's called, but it's a Steven Spielberg movie. I think it's Amblin. And it's a bike where it just like starts driving around or whatever it is. But I mean, it literally is, you are eliminating those jobs. So I mean, deliveries and things like that are better. But they're eliminated as you're progressing. You're going to have to, something has to give and something has to be eliminated from those industries in order to you know, continue. And it's great overall because, again, I was a package handler. You are in trailers unloading or loading trucks at 110 degree weather. You got guys passing out. You got these hot, bright lights in there that you want to turn off because they're so hot. I mean, you are just sweating bullets, you know, and they don't want you to do that because they need you on camera because it's an LP issue. You might open a box and throw something in your pocket. And I'm like, really? That is your focus right now. Your focus is not these guys could pass out from heat exhaustion. And some guys did. They had they were hospitalized because of how hot it is. And it doesn't matter where you are in the country. It's going to be a thing. Or freezing cold, same deal. Christmas time, guess what? We have so many more packages, any holiday really, but right. School and Christmas are the two biggest things. You get dozens and dozens and dozens of boxes of books. And guess what? They come off the belt the wrong way. They fall, they break. It's damaged goods. It's an insurance claim. All these things can be avoided by having an automated process. But again, you're eliminating an entire need of workforce.
Sure.
So that's dangerous. I mean, again, it's great, but I mean, it comes at a cost. But that's, you know, one great example that I've noticed. There's a handful of other things. I think we were talking about it earlier, the Google 2018 I/O conference with Google Duplex and how mm-hmm. it booked that appointment.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's right. Yeah, that's freaky.
And that's where people start getting uncomfortable with AI. Yeah. So I mean, yeah. You have that, you have...
our jobs are going and yeah.
Well, you have Sophia mm-hmm. with Hanson Robotics. And mm-hmm. I cannot tell you one video or one interview so far that I've been okay with or that the people that were either in the audience or part of it didn't freak out. And every single time, I don't know if the programmers thought it was funny, because it's an advanced chat bot. It's just giving you a lot of, you know, predisposed right. sort of questions. But every time it had a joke about annihilating humans. So in something that is so divisive already as it is, nobody likes to feel outclassed or outdated. That's the entire human genome, the entire human race that's you know, looking at this and going, I'm not cool with that. You know, and they're not making strides to make it easier. They're actually making it worse. And then you hear, you know, for Google, for example, with the Duplex, you can hear the cadences of
right, the ums and the ahs, and it sounds very real. But we also, this is a show about uncertainty, and I think there are going to be jobs and roles that get created on the back of all of this. As you say, anything sort of the data handling space that we don't really know exist at the moment, right? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. app developer, right? 20 years ago, what's an app developer?
Right.
So I think there's that book, The Rise of the Robots. Have you?
I haven't. Is it any good?
Right? Well, I'm just getting into it. So I can't give you a definitive answer.
Get back to me on that one then.
Yeah. But there are all these positive and negative unintended consequences to the pace of technological change, and it may lead to needs that we didn't know exist right now. We don't know that that exists right now. So I remain generally positive about some of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think that for anybody that is coming into the workforce, there are certain skills, you know, I think you need to be comfortable with technology. We just talked about at the beginning, you know, storytelling. My goodness, mm-hmm. if you're good at storytelling, then whatever it is that you want to do, I think that's a skill you can use in a variety of domains. So I think it's looking more towards loads of transferable skills, critical thinking, another skill set that we're rapidly losing, that are applicable and transferable to loads of other domains.
What I'm finding now is we live in a culture where the technology is outpacing the people that are capable of handling it and understanding it. Mm-hmm. We're in a society and a culture that is just, it's glorified instant gratification.
Yes.
I sent you a message. I sent this order. I want it today. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, you're losing the nuances of what it is to be reliable, dependable. Mm-hmm. I haven't heard from this person. They're out in the field. They have no service. Are they going to get the job done or are they not? Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are going going to be those opportunities. And I, that is essentially where I feel with Recruitum Entry, that I want to remind people, as they're so focused on their goal and objective, whether it's hiring the perfect candidate or a good candidate that they can, you know, transform into their necessary need or skill sets, a job seeker who's just trying to jump through every hoop, but just like, you know, I don't like the term resume writing because it's great for one particular role. You know, it's again, if you teach a man to fish, he'll be able to feed himself for the rest of his life. If you give him a fish, he's just going to say, okay, I'm done. Can you give me another one? And that's what resume writing to me really is. And I really feel that when you are able to talk to people about those values, about those transferable skills, about those opportunities that can stand out, humor, fitting well within an organization. We talked about, you know, you mentioned about being a clone. I don't want to be a clone. I want to be me. You hired me because of me. You didn't hire me because I look like Ben, you know, or, you know, I mean, you're a good looking guy, but, you know, no offense, you know what I mean? But the thing is that, you know, these are slowly but surely becoming the norms of what's missing, and people are just okay with that. And it's not, you know, a perfect example was, I like to have a couple of stories when I have interviews with, you know, potential, you know, full-time contracts or employment positions. So I was in I used to work in a UPS store. Mm-hmm. It used to be like a mail, I think they were originally called mailboxes, et cetera. The retail division of UPS wanted to expand out and, you know, sort of strengthen their branding and their name. So they bought out a lot of these stores and converted them to UPS stores. Still use the same POS. Everything on the back end is exactly the same, but it just, you know, they've slapped their name on it. So the problem is that they're independent franchises. So very similar to a lot of Starbucks and I think Chipotle as well. Even though you have in Subway, you may have definitive guidelines that you have to adhere by, but it doesn't necessarily mean that there's quality control, as to how you do business or how you interact with customers or, you know, things of that nature. So I was hired on at the time, ironically enough, I talked myself into a position, you know, it was a marketing role that I knew that they needed. Guy kept saying, you know, it's not really needed, not really needed. I developed that relationship for about 6 months. Finally, you know, he realized there was a need, he can combine it in with some counter help. And, you know, the opportunity was born. So, you know, I was doing a variety of things. One of them was covering, the front counter as needed. And like most small operations, they don't have enough resources, you know, necessary, and people call out or, you know, whatever it was. So I was the only person in a very busy Friday afternoon, lunchtime, something of that nature. And as most of us will find, there is a long line. People have their lunch breaks. They're rushing out, doing their errands, and trying to rush back and be on time. And I try to process things as fast as I can. But I've been that customer. I've been on that Walmart line. You're sitting there waiting and the lady's up there is talking about her kids and grandkids and every other thing. And you're like, really, is this the time to do this? Like, I mean, I'm all for it. Wonderful. You're great. You know, congratulations on your grandkids graduating, but I mean, I gotta go, you know? And it's just like, I'm human as well. And people, you know, sometimes you want to sort of break that fourth wall and relate to people. So lines out the door. It's 15, 20 people, whatever it is. And you see kind of a couple of people, you know, groaning, looking at their watch. And I'm trying to be, you know, humorous. And there was just something at that point in time where I just had a moment, and it just reminded me very much of Jimmy Stewart's It's a Wonderful Life, when he had the scene of the bank with all his, all the townsfolk. But I turned around and I just, out of nowhere, I was like, listen, ladies and gentlemen, I understand the situation here. You know, I know that a lot of you guys are on your lunch break. I understand it looks really bad to have one person up here. I'm processing as fast as I can. I really am. It sucks that this is the situation that we're in. What I will ask is that I do know that a lot of you guys are on timed breaks. So if we could just have those people come to the front, I'll process you as quickly as possible to get out. You know, you don't have to. I just, obviously they would appreciate it if you did. I would. And then that way we can, you know, I'm going to take care of every one of you guys, but just, you know, if we could just work together on this. And then I would not, you'd be blown away by the response. People were like, oh, sure. And they were moving out. And then people would come up and there were smiles on their face. They're like, thank you. Like, thank
yeah,
you for
get me. Yeah.
Right. Like, I have to go back. Like, I literally, this is my only break. I can't be late. I'm going to be fine. I said, listen, I understand. Just pass it on, you know, pay it forward, just have a good day, right? Yeah. And unbeknownst to me, in the back of the line was one of the VPs of HR of one of the prominent banks in the area. She came up, she had this big old smirk on her face. She gave me her card and she's like, when you're done today, you give me a call, all right? And she wanted to offer me a opportunity with the bank there as one of their bank specialists. With, you know, great money, great hours, whatever it is. Great story. Unfortunately, the ending is I did not get the position because I did reach out. It's very hard to get a recommendation from, you know, HR at all. Mm-hmm. You know, they're usually part of that walled garden. I didn't get it because when I call, you had to do a phone interview.
Mm-hmm.
And the phone system said that I was not... and I was like, you have got to be kidding me. Yeah. This is, and I told her, she's like, what? And there's nothing that they can do. So this is the pain points and the problems. Yeah. I literally impressed somebody who was like, I will hire you right now. And their system said, no. It's like, you've got to be kidding me.
It illustrates both the promise of, so the promise of what we were just talking about, because you wouldn't have had that opportunity if you didn't have the ability to relate to the people in that line.
Right.
But then it also illustrates the systematization of everything. And I get so frustrated as well, the dehumanization of everything that we do. And you need that because you need efficiency and blah, 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 and all that good stuff. But it can go the other way. And it's very frustrating.
Yeah.
But
so that's essentially why I'm doing recruitmentry as well, you know, and having that content, because you want to be in those situations where you can create those circumstances of value, and you want to be able to retell them in a way that is valuable to you. I can, you know, there's other ways that you can put it on a resume or a business resume if you're a company proposing, you know, work to one another.
Yeah.
But similar things.
I wanted to just touch on something and I was reminded to ask you this based on something I clicked on earlier today, and it was some article that, you know, typical article that you see, and I think it said something like, this career advice from Warren Buffett is, you know, what drives, you know, successful people or blah blah blah. And I just kind of clicked on it and basically it said the same old thing. Follow your passion, right? Okay. Great. You know, heard it before. Very important to follow your passion. Mm-hmm. But I guess a couple of things. One is some people don't know what their passion is. And then the second thing is, even if you know your passion, you still have to have some practical steps around how are you going to pay the rent? How are you going to, you know, pay your food? And then what is your strategy to make something out of your passion? I always think about those things, but I was wondering what your take is on all that, because that it seems ubiquitous everywhere. Follow your passion. You know, I agree. I love that. It's great, but you know, it's important to have the other side of the coin. And I'm just wondering what you see from the interactions that you have.
Well, that's a very good question. What I find is, and this is more so when we start talking about an instant gratification type culture, it's great to follow your passion. It's not great if that passion's a married woman. And it's the same thing when it comes to your outlook on life. So we're all passionate about something. So what I like to give an example for, because again, I grew up with the Ninja Turtles, so nobody's going to judge, but that was my thing. And my favorite, obviously, was Michelangelo. I'm a huge fan of orange, probably now because of the turtle, thinking about it. But one of the things that I had always seen was they're all brothers, if nobody has heard of the infamous Ninja Turtles. And Leonardo is the oldest brother. I don't know. They've changed it so many times now, but I'm going on the original, like what I grew up.
Sure. We'll take your word for it.
There you go. Yeah. So and then you had Raphael. Raph was really hot-headed. Mm-hmm. And he was always just really like, he was quick to fight, quick to judge, quick to, you know, get into things, quick to constantly, you know, buck heads with Leo all the time. And there was something that came across recently, and it might even have been a way that they were displaying how the relationships of the turtles are. I think it was actually something Master Splinter says, but he goes, Master Splinter is like the adopted father. He's a giant rat.
Okay.
Very smart guy. And he goes, you know, you are the most important of your brothers because you care so much. That's why you are as quick to anger as you are. And this is something that I want people to remember, that if you know people that are, you know, if they are more emotionally charged about a situation than you are, it's because they care more about it than you do. Mm-hmm. And it's not a good or bad thing. It's just, that is a fact. So when you have a, maybe there's a way that you're doing, you know, you're in school and you want to, I don't know, you want to do photography. That was a question that came up recently. I want to learn to be a photographer. You know, mm-hmm. what steps do I have to do? And I'm like, ooh, that's not really it's nice, but I mean, it's a very saturated market. There's a lot of people already doing it, and they are already in the market established as doing four or five other things mm-hmm. that are in that same hub. It's great to have those passions. Unfortunately, you have to keep in mind that, like you said, it needs to pay the bills and it needs to be realistic. So my focus would be, number one, take a look at realistically why you want to do this. Is this something you want to do because it's passion? Is it a hobby? Or is it something that you're going to create profit from? Because the objective and the way that you sort of take notes and inventory and hold receipts and get licenses are completely different if you're just, you know, doing woodworking as a hobby, or you're doing, you know, cabinet mm-hmm. and carpentry as a business. They're completely different avenues. Mm-hmm. So number one, you know, sit down and just be honest with yourself. Number two, take a look and see if there are pain points in that industry that you can fill. So design, marketing, it's a very, very noisy industry. Very difficult mm-hmm. to say, you know, hey, I stand out and I do this. You could have one person on Instagram that has, you know, 2,000-3,000 followers, and they say that they do that. And then you look at their pictures and it's pictures of just themselves, and you go, all right, well, where's the marketing? It doesn't feel legitimate. Or is it a brand? Is it a business? Is this something that, you know, you know that you can find value in, you can provide value in, and you can make money in? Once it starts getting to the point where you're making, I'm going to say $1,000 or $2,000 a month on this opportunity, at the very least, mm-hmm. it's a lucrative opportunity. LLC yourself, or, you know, whatever the LTD, I think it is, for UK individuals.
PLC, actually.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. See, I didn't know. Learned something new too. But do that. Yeah. And the thing is, and this is something I wish that somebody would have said to me, and why, mm-hmm. 10 or 15 years ago. Find something that is a trade that you can definitively do 100% of the time, regardless of where you are in your career life.
Mm-hmm.
This pays the bills.
Mm-hmm.
This could be plumbing. It could be HVAC. You know, again, for example, I'm in Florida. HVAC is a huge thing.
Yep.
HVAC and data centers. Miami, South Florida is nothing but data centers. So when the hurricanes hit, all the data centers go down and they build it back up. So those are the two things, you know. So look in your area. Is it plowing? You know,
could have been welding, Michael.
Could have been welding. There you go. See, I love that call. That great. You know, my thing was I wanted to, so I look at game design. Game design is an investment hobby until you make it. It's an ideal setup, but people don't understand that a lot of the times you're working for free for proof of concept.
Sure.
You're not making money. The same thing with photography, the same thing with anything that's going to be artistic. You're constantly trying to prove yourself, and it's really the only, industry that I know of, you know, and a lot of them that I've experienced, that people want to see a sample, they want to try a sample of your work. And if they don't like it, you don't get paid. They don't want to pay you. And then they go somewhere else. I don't know a doctor that you can go to. Like, let me see how good of a doctor you really are. Let me see.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way. So What I would say is there is going to be a risk in anything that it is that you want to pursue.
Yeah.
What I will advise is if you are looking to do it for money, there's a completely different way of doing it versus doing it for fun. I mean, one is you don't have to worry about what you're spending on a project. I can prototype something. I'm not worried about the cost. I just want to know how it comes out, maybe finding a way of making it better, you know, et cetera.
Sure. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I was talking to another podcast guest the other day. He's an actor and he spent, and he's, you know, he's not super famous. He's quite, you know, now he's got a really good resume if you look at all of the shows he's been on. And, he said that he spent a good 7 years living in a studio apartment in New York, bartending, you know, doing stuff like that before he really started to be able to move forward and take that as a career. And he made a deliberate decision to work and live in very auspicious, you know, under a very sort of Spartan, auspicious, I don't know if auspicious is the right word, but Spartan circumstances to get that cash rate, the burn rate right down and be able to, you know, go after those opportunities and to extend the time frame that he gave himself to be able to, you know, make this work.
Mm-hmm. And that is, again, the reality that you have to make that investment. So originally I'm from New York. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I was in New York City for about 3 or 4 years before I came down to Florida, and I was living under similar circumstances.
Right.
And that is, you just have to be realistic where when you are in New York, you realize that the majority of people are 2 steps away from homelessness at any given time.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's an actor, they're doing this or doing that, and you go back and they're in a hostel living with, you know, 12 other people. Sure. Or they're living in their backpack or suitcase. And, you know, I don't want to be just another guy who's doing design work on a laptop in Starbucks somewhere. That wasn't my goal, you know. And those are the circumstances that you're going to find yourself in. Now, I'm not saying that there isn't going to be a time where if you believe in something, you make it happen no matter what you got to do. I mean, we talk about Steve Harvey being in the projects, right? And then he grew out of it. He is, obviously everybody knows who he is now. He, you know, Dio Hughley, Pink. Pink is a perfect example of a very strong woman who, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of all of her music, but I very much appreciate her story and the power that comes behind it where, I mean, she was sleeping out of her car for the majority of gigs before she was found. And she had a lot of things that, you know, messed with her before she became to be who the amazing singer that she is now. I mean, again, I don't, you know, a lot of her songs are might be against men or they might be kind of, you know, feminine, but her voice is amazing, you know? And it's like, how could this one not be found earlier? You know? And that is essentially what I want to do with Recruitmentry and the content. I don't want to have people that are out of the country or out of the area not knowing, you know, sometimes when you're in those situations, you don't, you know, hindsight's 2020. Oh, just go on internet and look up this. It's like, dude, I'm trying to make sure I got showered today. You know what I mean? I want to make sure that I'm ready. I got food to eat and my phone was charged. I don't have those opportunities. But if somebody says, listen, check this out, and they just point you in the right direction, chances are you're going to take a look. And you have these opportunities, like when you're growing up as youth, at least here in the States, you have, you know, Sesame Street, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, Magic School Bus, Bill Nye the Science Guy. They teach those setups, right? Where this is what to expect growing up. This is touching on, you know, how to be polite and Schoolhouse Rock and, you know, how bills and things that are ratified are made. But when you look at these things as you get older, those really missing. And I think we touched on this before as well. Mm-hmm. Those three core topics or core things that are super important as you get older. And number one is relationships with friends, family, personally, professionally, romantically. They're not really guided anywhere. You just kind of have, you know, therapists and maybe some mentors and, you know, some friends that had a couple of beers and they tell you what they think, but it's not conducive to long-term. Again, short-term, maybe, you know, they hear something, move on, don't worry, you'll be better off, you know, and why? You know, there's not a growth plan that's in there. Number two is going to be finances, okay? People are as you know, being obviously in your line of work, people are horrific with their money more often than not. Not everybody. I don't want to gender, but you know, generalize. But you know, there could be a lot more resources that are not.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, especially for younger people, there's the there are a number of fallacies, and one that is, I think, from a decision making and cognitive, you know, behavioral economic standpoint, is the hot hand fallacy. So it's when you make some money and you make, you know, whether it's a gig or it's a good role, and you just kind of think that's going to continue indefinitely.
And it doesn't.
So maybe buying that house, that car, you know, whatever else, is not such a great idea.
And that has happened. I cannot tell you how many opportunities where, and I realized early on as a graphic designer, where people are going to pick you up and burn you.
Yeah.
Pick you up for an overflow of work. Hey, we got this work. And they will tell you whatever that they need to tell you.
Yeah.
Right. Just like candidates do to get in the door. And then once that overflow, that project that they didn't plan for is finished, they got to, you know, reduce, you know, the workload, and, you know, they'll promise you whatever they need to do. And then you realize after one, two, three, four, half a dozen times of doing that,
I
can't do this because I can't, you know, go to my, you know, landlord or, you know, mortgage payment and say, hey, listen, I really enjoy where I'm living right now. Here's the thing. They don't care. They don't just, no matter what you say, it's just, but it's a terrible thing to deal with. And then obviously the third thing is going to be people's careers. Mm-hmm. You know, there's all these different people that say they do these things. And then you read, here's an article from Warren Buffett. I don't personally know Warren Buffett. So is he going to affect anything that I do or say in my life? And then you read the article and it's like, it's what I knew already. So I didn't have to hear it from Warren Buffett. It could have been Michael Mendite. It could have been Jane Smith. It could have been anybody who gave you that information. But did you find value in it, or did you feel like, you know what, this was marketed away to because of this speaker, you know? Or was it more towards, you know, speaking to you directly or speaking on that specific topic? And those are the nuts and bolts of the conversations that I have. I really listen in on those individuals and, you know, why they say these things.
Yeah, that's really. That's really great, because I think we often, though, those articles are everywhere, right? And so, you know, Bill Gates says this and Warren Buffett says that and whoever else says that. And, you know, this whole thing about follow your passion, you know, the one thing that underpins everyone who's successful is they follow their passion. Yeah, but there are also a lot of people who try to follow their passion but failed for one reason or the other, because a lack of tools, a lack of mentoring, a lack of, you know, as you say, relationships, all of that stuff. So I think it's great what you're doing with Recruiter Mentoring, because you're kind of drilling down several layers below all of that and helping people. I think it's wonderful.
I mean, let's be honest here. Does Bill Gates want other millionaires to deal with? No. Does you know, Grant Cardone want other real estate empires to come up? No. I mean, these people say these things because they realize that they're not going to give you the tutelage that you need to be where you are. They want to bring you up to a certain point where you're still a student, you know, in their eyes, until it comes to the point where they don't want to be in the game anymore. Then you can do whatever you want. Nobody, you know, this whole notion of having, you know, healthy competition, the only person or group that benefits is customers. As a business, you don't want to undercut, you don't want to cut corners. I mean, it does help for innovation, sure. But I mean, when you're in an industry, you want to be the expert in the industry. You want to be that go-to person. So when they say, I mean, there's so many other articles and places where they say, don't follow what these people say, you know? And my thing isn't, I'm not going to tell you what to think. I'm going to show you the tools, and you choose to do what you see fit based on your situation. And that's what it is. We have conversations. We talk about value. Okay. And value could mean, money to a specific individual, to a student. It could be $20, you know, it could be, you know, helping them through, getting a voucher or, you know, eventually long-term, I would like to be the go-to, you know, hub and opportunity for multiple individuals and multiple organizations to grow with those resources that are available. You know, so you have like these tech schools at startup, for example, and they're going to teach you how to program this specifically. It's a hot job, All right. Mm. When they're done, they're not going to help you with finding a job. They're not going to help right. you with setting up your resume. They're going to help you up with value, or now you've had a gap of employments in between. Again, if I have any experience, it's going to be dealing with each and every one of those things due to the freelancing that I was doing, due to the consulting that I've been doing, and you know, the different opportunities. Mm-hmm. But then I want to be able to vet the vetters as well. These are the people mm-hmm. that say, hey, we have jobs, but I want to talk to you. Are you getting back to, you know, to clients or customers? Mm-hmm. Do you have quality jobs? Are you invested in people's futures, or are you just invested in getting paid? And I mean, I understand people have to get paid. I'm not against that. Just do a good thing while you do it.
Sure. Yeah. It makes perfect sense as well, because there's no set formula for any of this stuff. No. And anyone who tells you, well, if you follow my, you know, 8-step plan to whatever it is lying to you, because the circumstances and the variables that allowed them to be wherever they are not going to be exactly the same. So I think for anyone that's looking to further their careers, their opportunities, et cetera, it's looking for this kind of lateral, more transferable skills that can apply to different circumstances. And that's all about, you know, being resilient and being able to work in the midst of loads of uncertainty. So I think what you're doing with all of this is very positive.
Absolutely. And I appreciate it. And like I said, there's a lot of people that are reaching out, and they're definitely interested in being a part of, almost it feels like a movement now. You know, it's not just content, it's not just a podcast, but you know, and again, it hits home for me because I've dealt with a lot of these experiences. I had opportunities when I was in school, when I was a teenager in high school, to go to a couple of things that, you know, for whatever reason, one reason or another, I wasn't able to do. One thing that stands out in my mind is I was taking I think we talked about this as well in the preamble. I was taking a chemistry class, and chemistry is incredibly interesting for those who, you know, want to pursue it. There's a lot of math involved, but the process of it between that, it's either chemistry or physics. I find both to be interesting. They're just very heavily formulaic and math leaned. So there are a lot of resources and books and things of that nature that sometimes you need to pick up to as a requirement in these courses. And there was a small little paperback, little reference book that we needed not only for the class that I was in, but also just to continue on. I think we needed it with before we took the final for the year. The book was like $5. And I remember the teacher's name was Mr. Ottens. I don't know if he probably will never listen to this, but he was a strange guy, but he was always memorable for what he was doing. He tried to make class and everything interesting, but you know, science can be dry depending on who your teacher is and topic. And I couldn't come up with the $5. I didn't have money coming up like that. And I remember going home and asking for it, and the answer was no. And I'm like, and I try to find a different way, try to figure it out. And I mean, again, a matter of $5 for me or you, I mean, it's nothing now. It's a coffee. It's a bite to eat. It's, you know, a box of cereal.
Sure.
But I couldn't find that. And, and to have to deal with that at such an early age, I mean, it starts having that reality of, you know, hey, I have to deal with these types of things, which is fine. But I had to go back to my teacher and tell him I didn't have $5 and I needed the book in order to continue the class, you know? And I was like, is there a way to copy, you know, like, you know, photocopy this? And he was like, no. And he just didn't think, you know, he couldn't perceive for whatever reason why I couldn't come up with $5. And, you know, long story short about it, I think I was able to come up with three. I think I don't even remember how it is. I maybe asked people for a couple dollars, whatever it was. I came up with three, and the teacher just could not believe that I can come up with this. And he's like, just ask your parents. And I was like, I can't. That's not the option, you know. And he ended up giving me the book, I believe, or he took the $3 or whatever it was. But I never want that to be an issue with people that are looking for work. I don't want them to be held back by, I can't afford a resume rewrite, or I don't have this resource. There's resources available online that are almost for free or very low cost that were never available, and you can get them on your phone, and they're available almost everywhere. When I was in high school, there was internet cafes that you had to go and like get on the internet for, and there were certain places to do it. It wasn't just like it's in a device that's more sophisticated than what launched the spaceships into space with NASA on your phone. Insane, you know? And I don't want people to have to deal with that ever again.
Right. What I did want to cover off is your own views on decision-making and uncertainty. If you had any specific thoughts, you know, how do you make a big decision? Is there anything that you do? Is there anything that do you consult people? How do you think about, you know, making a major change in direction?
Well, it's a good question. It's something that it really just depends on the change or the direction that you're going to be pursuing. So with anything, there's going to be the go-to people that we do ask, whether it be close friends, family members, mentors, church members, things of that nature. We value their outside opinion on our narrative of our life. They're also thinking clear-headed. Compared to, you know, again, when you're in the moment, you may not be thinking clearly. So if it's a new job opportunity, it is something that I will, let's say, for example, weigh the pros and cons. If it's a new client that I think might be not exactly the right fit, that's also something that I may, you know, weigh in. It really comes down to what it is that I'm seeking at the end of that choice. It's usually pretty clear. If you need to, you're at work, you have a kiting suspect who's doing something illegal, perhaps financially with the account that you're looking at. It's pretty clear what you need to do. It's not clear if you are one of the only individuals in the office and it's 2 o'clock in the morning. You need to make a judgment call. And that really just comes down to experience based on what's happened. So with me, I've dealt with quite a few things in my life compared to the majority of people. I don't expect them to have as much thorough insight as I do. What I will say is that there are people that I do throw ideas towards. This could be something as simple as I'm doing a game design project. Does this sound like a good idea? This could be sometimes strangers when you're getting insight. It's the easiest thing to walk up to somebody on a subway and start having a conversation about them and not necessarily bearing all, but getting their feedback, because generally speaking, they don't know you. You're probably not going to see them again, and you get real honest feedback. You could be more honest with somebody that you don't entirely know. What I will say is with any choice, there is going to be risk and there is going to be consequence. I would very carefully think through or write down those possibilities. That could be losing relationships with people. You make a choice that's going to hurt a set of friends, or you make a business decision and it burns some employees. It's going to, you know, put some people in the wrong place, especially in the wrong frame of mind. And especially with recruitment entry and dealing with so many different people and so many different backgrounds, you have to sort of be self-aware constantly of what it is that you are, where your direction is, you know, how you're being perceived and where you're going. So for something as simple as a job change, I mean, you can consult, you know, there's career advocates and things like that. If there's a money investment, I mean, people are usually very, very careful about their health, their food, or their money. I want to eat somewhere. I'm going to do some thorough research on it to make sure that it's gluten-free, or, you know, people who have eaten there previously are not going to have that issue. That would really just be, I guess, my general thoughts on, you know.
Those are great thoughts and great techniques. I'm a big advocate of the power of negative visualization. So, you know, so it speaks to your point of, well, what are my concerns about all of this stuff? You know, this could go wrong, you know, I could lose my marriage, or, you know, I could lose all my money or whatever. And then start to work backwards from that maybe some of those things you're kind of overblown, or if they did happen, they wouldn't be that bad, or there are certain things you can do about them. And that gives people confidence versus, oh, you know, you're just not thinking positively enough. You know, it's there's a limitation to just being optimistic. It's very important to be optimistic, but you also need to be
realistic.
Again, strategies, tools, tactics to make it all work. So yeah, really, really like what you said there. It resonates with me.
Well, what I would say is that every opportunity that crosses paths with you and with your line of business and things of that nature, they are all learning experiences, good or bad. Mm-hmm. And even some of the bad ones, I mean, I don't know if you've seen it, but obviously Jordan Belfort is well known being for the Wolf of Wall Street. He was a terrible guy. Now he's transformed and he's this, you know, amazing speaker or whatever. One of his quotes I want to end, you know, and give you with this and share with the listeners. You know, what he says is, I want you to back yourself into a corner. Give yourself no choice but to succeed. Let the consequences of failure become so dire and so unthinkable that you'll have no choice but to do whatever it takes to succeed. And that's actually something I have pinned on my wall and I look at every day. I mean, that's the reality of things. You could be homeless. You could be going without food. You could lose your marriage. You could lose, you know, your house, your car, your company, your reputation. This is something that is incredibly important to, you know, if you're making a life or death decision, man, put in the resources, talk to people that are, again, the experts in the field. And sometimes if I am, I will definitely lend my voice. If not, I want to know the answer and I want to connect with those people that are the right, you know, fit and have that right message. So just something to share and think about as well.
Very cool. Very cool. Before we go, for my listeners who I'm sure are very interested and intrigued and want to know more about you and your work, how can they best find you?
Google search usually. No.
Not that many Michael Midnights out there. That's a great name, by the way.
I had one of the places I worked at, there was a client, his name was Goodnight, and I had one of the service managers screenshot it and send it to me. He goes, is this a relative of yours? And I'm like, no, but that's hilarious. They could find me on a variety of places. LinkedIn is a good spot. I'm usually there, you know, talking to a lot of great people. Mike Tech Studios is my design brand. So MIKTEK.TV is in television. Some of my work is up there. I have my own Mike Tech Studios podcast that's on, you know, YouTube and iTunes, and also on Recruitmentary, which I'm not going to try to spell that, but if you if you look it up, and you will absolutely find it. It has its own website, podcasts on YouTube as well, and content. And I definitely welcome people to connect, you know, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I'm all over the place.
Awesome. We covered a lot of ground. Was there anything that we didn't cover that you wanted to mention?
I think that's it.
Cool. I think we did it. Yeah.
I hope I can be a value of whatever it is that was listening.
And I'm sure you will.
If they stayed that long, I think they're a champion and I appreciate them listening for the whole time.
No, they do. This is all about long form. We get into it here. So this was great. I really appreciate you taking the time to speak to me, and I wish you all the best, and let's stay connected.
Absolutely, man. You're a great guy, and I appreciate what you do as well.
Thanks, Michael. Bye for now.
Bye now.
I hope you guys all enjoyed that. And if you want to know more about Michael, check out the show notes. We've got all the links to his work there. I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation, as you could probably tell. Michael's a great guy. It was very easy to speak to him. And it also got me thinking about the role of authenticity in our own lives, our professional lives primarily, because we put on these masks sometimes that I think we tend to overdo from time to time. And I think sometimes it makes sense to just say what's on our minds. I don't know if you had some similar thoughts or other thoughts. Maybe have a think about the role of creativity and authenticity in your own life, and drop me a note or leave a comment on any of our social media posts about this episode, or just reach out on anything about the show at all, allthingsrisk@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. I'm always interested in suggestions for topics and guests on the show. I thoroughly appreciate that. And thank you very much to all of those who have done so already. And if you haven't yet done so, subscribe. allthingsrisk.co.uk, that's .co.uk. You can find all the ways in which you can get the show on your iPhone, your Android, however you listen to podcasts. And we've got some great ones coming up. I don't want you to miss them. So subscribe and you won't. We'll be back soon. In the interim, and as always, don't forget, risk is life.